Hello listeners, I'm your speaker Casey, and in this week's episode I have something a little different lined up for you. In honour of Pride Month, today I'm going to be talking about the history of conversion therapy and how it still exists today. This is a podcast about cults, so you may be wondering how this will tie in. But after researching in order to deliver this episode, I realised that conversion therapy, as it stands in the world today, is some of the most cult-like behaviour I have ever come across. A small, tiny piece of business before we begin, I would like to give a shout out to my very first Patreon subscribers, Ethan and Darian. Thank you so much for this support and for believing in the content that I am creating. Next month there will be a two-part special on Shoko Asahara and his cult Amshin Rikyo, the group who launched a sarin gas attack on Tokyo's subway stations. These episodes coincide with the two-year anniversary of Asahara's execution following the death penalty. You can find me at patreon.com/thecultvault. Before we jump in, I just wanted to let you all know that this episode comes with a trigger warning. It includes themes of physical and sexual assault, torture, and themes of abandonment and mental health. There is an extensive history on conversion therapy ahead, and for those of you who know a little or a lot about this, you'll know there is some sensitive subject matter. Likewise, we will be talking a lot about family issues that often come up when someone from the LGBT community confides in their family about their sexual identity, orientation, or gender. However, despite all of these difficult themes, it is important to note how far civil movements like this one have come, and by talking about the past, perhaps we are not condemned to repeat it in the future. So without further ado, let's get into it. My research concluded that conversion therapy began in the late 19th century, but there are many sources that claim different stories about its exclusive origins. I found an article on history.com written by Ellen Blakemore. It was titled Gay Conversion Therapy, Origins of the 19th Century. A lot of the further research I did stemmed from this article. It starts by introducing our first notable character. In 1899, a German psychiatrist electrified an audience at a conference on hypnosis with a bold claim that he had turned a gay man straight. All it took was 45 hypnosis sessions and a few trips to a brothel. Albert von Schrenck-Notzing claimed that through hypnosis, he had manipulated the man's sexual impulses, diverting them from his interest in men to a lasting desire for women. Notzing didn't know at the time, but he had just kicked off a phenomenon that would later be known as conversion therapy, a set of pseudo-scientific techniques designed to quash LGBTQ people's sexuality and make them conform in society's expectations of how they should behave. Though it's dismissed by the medical establishment today, conversion therapy was widely practiced throughout the 20th century, leaving shame, pain, and self-hatred in its wake. Encyclopedia.com tells us that Notzing was born on the 18th of May 1862 in Oldenburg, Germany. He studied at the University of Munich. He investigated the mysteries of somnambulism, or sleepwalking. Notzing claimed that a student, during his hypnotic experiments, obtained duplications of personality. He soon realised that there was a new realm of science awaiting discovery. A small thing about Notzing was that he actually appears in the Guinness Book of World Records. The GuinnessWorldRecords.com website tells us that in 1896, Notzing drew upon his studies of suggestibility and memory recall to testify in a murder trial. His testimony related to the difficulties in accepting witness statements after the trial's pre-publicity, an issue that still affects trials today, especially when trying to find an unbiased jury. Blakemore would go on to say in her article on history.com that homosexuality, especially same-sex relationships between men, was considered deviant, sinful, and even criminal for centuries. In the late 19th century, psychiatrists and doctors began to address homosexuality too. They labelled same-sex desire in medical terms and started looking for ways to, quote, reverse it. There were plenty of theories as to why people were homosexual. For Eugen Steinach, a pioneering Austrian endocrinologist, homosexuality was rooted in a man's testicles. This particular theory led to testicle transplantation experiments in the 1920s, during which gay men were castrated, then given, quote, heterosexual testicles. Steinek was born on the 27th of January in 1961 in Austria. His father and grandfather were physicians, who also bred cattle. Steinek's experience with cattle breeding and the physical behavioural consequences of castration later influenced much of his research. He studied natural science at the University of Geneva, Switzerland, and then went on to study medicine at the University of Vienna, Austria. He graduated in 1886. The Embryo Project Encyclopedia says Steinek researched sex hormones and their effect on mammals in the late 19th to early 20th century in Europe. He would experiment on rats by removing their testicles and implanting them elsewhere in their bodies. He found that the testes interstitial cells produce male sex hormones. He developed the Steinek rejuvenation procedure, which he claimed would rejuvenate men by increasing their production of sex hormones. Steinek's work on female sex hormones and on ovarian extracts led to the development of the first standardized injectable estrogen. This research helped others explain the roles of sex hormones and develop hormone drugs. So despite these procedures and research being completely barbaric, the testing would eventually lead, ironically for Steinek, in assisting with same-sex couples to be able to have children through insemination and surrogacy, and for gender identity treatment to take place for those with gender dysphoria. Blakemore's article says, others theorised that homosexuality was a psychological disorder instead. Sigmund Freud hypothesised that humans are born innately bisexual, and that homosexual people become gay because of their conditioning. Though Freud emphasised that homosexuality wasn't a disease per se, some of his colleagues didn't agree. They began to use new psychiatric interventions in an attempt to, quote, cure gay people. An article on the Independent website written by Robert Colville talks about Dr. Robert Galbraith Heath. Heath was devoted to curing schizophrenia and other mental illnesses by delivering targeted electrical pulses to the septal region of the brain's subcortex by means of electrodes through the skull. Although he would always experiment with electric shock therapy, he engaged in many other tangents of research and published at least 425 papers. Heath was born on the 9th of May 1915 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He was encouraged to study medicine from a young age by his father, who had been a general practitioner. Heath completed his medical education in 1938 at the University of Pittsburgh. He then went on to study in New York and then Columbia's College of Physicians and Surgeons with a fellowship at the Psychoanalytical Clinic. He then went to the Department of Neurosurgery at the University of Oklahoma. Heath's research into, quote, turning gay men straight included hiring prostitutes and gathering heterosexual pornography to change a person's sexual orientation. As this was early in the 20th century, of course, it included some strange and cruel experimentation. His efforts were often spent trying to treat homosexual men by turning repugnant feelings toward the opposite sex into pleasurable ones, and similar experiments were used on, quote, frigid women. He experimented with dripping drugs deep into the brain down tiny pipes called cannulae, targeting the same region as the electrodes. He also tested a brainwashing drug called bulbocapnine for the CIA on animals and a human prisoner as part of the MKUltra program, to explore limits and limitations of the American body. He injected horseradish peroxidase into the brain to see how it carried chemicals. He gave a talk to the army about electrical stimulation on the brain. He was then contacted by the government to test psychoactive drugs on prisoners. He was supposedly able to record septal activity resulting from alcohol, tobacco, amphetamines, marijuana, and sexual orgasm. In 1972, Heath began testing the effects of marijuana on monkeys by blowing the equivalent of 250 joints of smoke into their cages every day. The Advocate on YouTube has a video titled A Brief History of Gay Conversion Therapy, where he talks about how it's also known as ex-gay therapy, pray the gay away, or the sexual orientation change effort. He also speaks about how there was a doctor in the 1800s named Graham Hammond who advised patients that they could overcome their homosexuality by riding a bicycle. The Advocate on YouTube goes on to say that Dr. Havelock Ellis could hypnotise you, get you drunk, and send you to a brothel full of women to turn a gay man straight. With women and conversion therapy, he would hypnotise them, get them drunk, and send them home to see their husbands. Britannica.com explains Ellis this way. Havelock Ellis, In full, Henry Havelock Ellis was born on February the 2nd, 1859, in Croydon, Surrey. He was an English essayist and a physician who studied human sexual behaviour and challenged Victorian taboos against public discussion of the subject. Ellis's studies in the psychology of sex is a comprehensive and groundbreaking encyclopedia of human sexual biology, behaviour and attitudes. In separate volumes, he examined such topics as homosexuality, masturbation and the physiology of sexual behaviour. Ellis viewed sexual activity as the healthy and natural expression of love, and he sought to dissipate the fear and ignorance that characterised many people's attitudes toward human sexuality. His work helped to foster the open discussion of sexual problems, and he became known as the champion of women's rights and of sex education. Other historical conversion therapy techniques include ice pick lobotomies, castration by Catholic churches, primal scream therapy, and a Russian doctor named Serge Voronoff, who claimed he could turn gay people straight by transplanting monkey testicles onto castrated gay men. He also claimed his monkey transplants could provide immortality, turn grandmothers into debutantes, and cure idiocy among the people of the early 1900s. An article on the Atlas Obscura, written by Eric Grundhauser, says between 1920 and 1940, some 2,000 monkey man testicle rejuvenations were administered everywhere from France to India and beyond. In the modern view, the procedure seems somewhat ridiculous, but his legacy as a real-life, balls-to-the-wall mad scientist is truly enthralling. Another type of conversion therapy from the 1900s, which is still largely used to this day, is aversion therapy. GoodTherapy.com describes aversion therapy as a treatment method in which a person is conditioned to dislike a certain stimulus due to its repeated pairing with an unpleasant experience. For example, a person trying to quit smoking might pinch their skin. It's often been noted for its controversial approach and outcomes. In conversion therapy, aversion therapy is designed to convert gay people to heterosexuality. Some aversion techniques have included administering shocks to a person's genitals or inducing a person to vomit when they are stimulated with sexualized images of the same sex. Numerous groups have spoken out against the practice, and people who have been subjected to it have said that it's both abusive and ineffective. Also, it has been used to treat people who identify as trans or non-binary, the intent being to force them to adopt the gender expressions that matches their biological sex. In some cases, minors are sent to conversion camps or treatment facilities by parents, eliminating the option to consent. Despite the medical field no longer recognising conversion therapy and the civil rights movement making headway into making conversion therapy completely illegal, several prominent religious people have spoken out in favour of aversion therapy being used as a means of conversion therapy, claiming that ex-gays are being cured. Despite conversion therapy being proven to affect a person's sexual expression, promote feelings of guilt and shame, it has not been proven to change anyone's sexual orientation. There has been a number of notable ex-gay camps and conferences that have set up to practice conversion therapy since the 70s. One of these was led by Dr. Joseph Nicolosi Sr., and he coined his work, naming it Reparative Therapy. Upon opening the Joseph Nicolosi Sr. website, it says in bold letters, "If gay doesn't define you, you don't have to be gay." Following the death of Nicolosi, a string of protests were born. An article on BusinessInside.com, written by Isabel Asher Hamilton in 2019, read, "Amazon has taken down a crop of gay conversion books after sustained pressure from activists. The books were written by Dr. Joseph Nicolosi, a vocal man of so-called gay conversion therapy who died in 2017. The practice of gay conversion therapy claims that people can be cured of homosexuality. It has been widely debunked and criticised for its harmful effect on the LGBTQ community. One activist in particular was a driving force behind the removal of Nicolosi's books, which was first reported by Gay Star News. UK-based Rojo Allen became aware of Nicolosi's works after a local church planned to screen a film promoting conversion therapy, although the screening was later cancelled due to protests. I was shocked that this was actually happening in my town, so I started Googling about it, which led me to Joseph Nicolosi's website and then to his books. I saw they were on Amazon. Alan added he experienced conversion therapy as a child, which spurred him on to get the books removed. He was particularly concerned by A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality, which was published in 2002. And Nicolosi says it teaches parents how to react to a male child or teenager who rejects his own gender and adopts a highly feminized style of activity and interest. After a 3-month battle and many protests later, the books would eventually be taken down from Amazon, along with a handful of other texts around conversion therapy. Another leading name in today's reparative therapy and literature is Richard Cohen. Wikipedia, although not always the most reliable source, says that Richard A. Cohen was born in 1952. He was a psychotherapist, educator, and author of 5 books, including his latest release, Healing Heterosexuality, Time, Touch, and Talk. He is the director of Positive Approaches to Healthy Sexuality, or PATH, which was founded in 2003, and he was the past director of the International Healing Foundation. Cohen offers his newest book as a blueprint for the healing humanity. In it, he presents the principles of emotional healing, healthy attachment, and unconditional love that he discovered in his personal healing journey and applied this to helping thousands of others in his career as a therapist, coach, and facilitator. Cohen hails from a Jewish family. He was both bar mitzvahed and confirmed at a Jewish synagogue in Philadelphia. While attending Boston University, he became an evangelical Christian and later joined the Unification Church. If you haven't heard of the Unification Church, then you should go back through the episodes that I've released on this podcast, because there's a very interesting episode on the Unification Church, aka the Moonies, a few episodes back. In 1980, Cohen married Jae Suk, a South Korean woman, and in 1995, Cohen and his family left the Unification Church and returned to their Christian roots. Cohen lived a gay life in his undergraduate years at Boston University. His dream was to marry a woman and create a loving family. He sought professional help to resolve his unwanted same-sex attractions and fulfill that dream. Cohen discovered that most therapists either didn't have a clue how to help him or simply told him he was born that way and to embrace a gay life. Pursuing his dream for marriage led to an exhaustive search for answers. Cohen discovered the root causes of his same-sex attractions and began to resolve each underlying issue with the help of therapy, family, friends, and faith. He dedicated the rest of his life to promote healing and wholeness for those who struggled as he had, and for all those regardless of their race, religion, ethnicity, gender identity, or sexual orientation. Cohen lives in Washington, D.C., in the metropolitan area, with his wife of 40 years. Together, they are parents of 3 adult children. The International Healing Foundation was dissolved in 2015. While he was a psychotherapist in Washington State, Cohen was a registered counsellor. During his therapeutic practice in Maryland, there was no license requirement for counsellors until the time he was transitioning to full-time teaching. Over the past 12 years, Cohen has trained over 6,000 psychologists, psychotherapists, physicians, and ministry leaders throughout the USA, Latin America, Europe, and the Middle East. In 2002, Cohen was permanently expelled from the American Counseling Association after it accused him of 6 violations of its ethics code, which bars members from actions which seek to meet their personal needs at the expense of clients, those that exploit the trust and dependency of clients, and for soliciting testimonials or promoting products in a deceptive manner. Noting that the ACA is a non-licensing trade organisation and that his expulsion was based upon a single complaint, Cohen did not appeal the ACA decision. He claimed that the action was entirely for his efforts in the ex-gay movement, specifically for the book Coming Out Straight. He called the ACA a biased organisation and asked, "Why would I want to be in a totally gay-affirming club?" An article on thinkprogress.org, written by Zach Ford in 2011, described Cohen this way. Richard Cohen is one of the most public purveyors of reparative ex-gay therapy, promoting and lecturing about the scientifically unsound belief that gays and lesbians can change their sexual orientation. The American Counseling Association permanently expelled Cohen in 2002, but his bizarre reparative techniques have attracted mainstream media attention from outlets like CNN and MSNBC. On Friday, Cohen's counselling organisation, the International Healing Foundation, announced that it was offering a sincere, heartfelt apology to everyone in the LGBTQ community and shifting its focus from change is possible to coming out loved. Beginning today, the International Healing Foundation's doors are wide open to everyone in the LGBTQ community and also in the straight communities. The new mission, Coming Out Loved, is the catalyst of true tolerance, real diversity and equality for all. The IIHF staff will assist anyone who is conflicted about their sexuality and other challenging issues that arise for many in the gay community. Cohen asserts that everyone should be loved and accepted for who they are. He said, by opening our doors to everyone in the LGBTQ and straight communities, we are expanding upon our mission and broadening the scope of our services. Unfortunately, nothing at IHF seems to have actually changed. In fact, despite the sugar-coated rebranding, the organisation is still promoting services geared towards people with unwanted same-sex attractions. Citing the NARTH guidelines and Cohen's absurd mythology about the causes of same-sex attraction. NARTH is the National Association for the Research and Therapy of Homosexuality, a disavowed organisation of mostly religious leaders that promotes the idea that sexual orientation can be changed in defiance of all reputable research. Other leading names in the industry would head in the opposite direction and do a complete 180. An article on People.com, written in 2019, said McCrae Game, the man who had founded one of the biggest conversion therapy programs in the country, is opening up about his decision to come out as gay after leading the homophobic organization for 20 years. Game, 51, spoke candidly about his decision to go public with his truth after preaching that being gay was a ticket to hell. "I snapped out of it. That's the phrase I use," he says. In 1999, Game started Truth Ministry, a faith-based conversion therapy program in South Carolina that aims to suppress or completely change a person's LGBTQ plus sexuality through counselling, interventions or ministry. The program was eventually rebranded and renamed as Hope for Wholeness in 2013. "I'm trying to highlight the wrongs in so many of these organizations. I gave 28 years of my life of repressing my homosexuality, not understanding and not knowing really what it's like to be able to simply just say, I am who I am." Game described the harmful impact of living in denial. "I've always said I have a chronic anxiety problem. That's gone. I realized I was causing my own mental illness. And that's what I was doing to other people. I believe repressing your natural orientation causes mental illness." He then went on to describe himself as a practicing homosexual from the age of 19 to 22. He told the interviewer that he went to an anti-gay conference that led him to conversion therapy. There, he said, he was not taught that he would go from gay to straight, but rather it was more of a promise to me that my attractions would lessen, that they would diminish. Another leading name would also come out around the same time. An article on TheGuardian.com reads, "A prominent conversion therapy advocate, David Matheson, has come out as gay after spending what he said were decades of his life entrenched in homophobia." Matheson was a practitioner of the practice also known as ex-gay therapy or reparative therapy, which promotes the false idea that being gay is something that should and can be cured. These therapies have been denounced by major medical bodies, including the American Medical Association, America's Psychological Association, and the UK's National Health Service. Matheson said he knew his work had helped some people, but was certain that it hurt some people too. "Not that I would excuse myself, but any shortcomings I had as a therapist came from too narrow a view of what emotionally healthy can look like," Matheson said on Facebook. "They came from my own homophobia and narrow-mindedness. I'm truly sorry for those flaws and the harm they have surely caused some people, and I'm sorry for the confusion and pain my choice might be causing others." Matheson, a Mormon, affirmed his sexuality this week after the LGBT advocacy group Truth Wins Out reported on a leaked private conversation between Matheson and conversion therapy advocate Rich Weiler. After the private conversation was made public, Matheson wrote a Facebook post to affirm he was gay. Matheson said in the post he realised last year that he had to make a change in his life and divorced his wife of 34 years in part because he felt he could no longer ignore his desire to have a relationship with a man. What you can take from this is that my time in a straight marriage and in the ex-gay world was genuine and sincere and a rich blessing to me, Matheson wrote. I remember most of it with fondness and gratitude for the joy and growth it caused in me and many others. Matheson told Salt Lake Tribune's podcast Mormonland that he was exposed to homophobia as a youth in the Mormon church and found solace in therapy he received to deal with his own same-sex attraction. He said the benefits of that therapy and his desire to help men like himself drove himself to become a therapist. Conversion therapy usually uses the talk therapy technique, but there have been documented instances of counsellors using extreme aversion treatments such as electroshock therapy. Matheson said he has never used aversion treatments. To all the men whose internalised homophobia I colluded with, or who went away from therapy feeling that really was kind of hurtful to me, I am so sorry. Matheson said, I got into this because I really had a sense of compassion and love for this community. Many have issued statements of apology for the trauma and repression that they have inflicted on people's lives, eventually admitting that this therapy does not work. An article on 60 Minutes says former gay conversion therapist John Smith says gay conversion therapy does not work. He said, quote, every single one that I have had contact with has struggled terribly through the years with depression. John Smith knows better than most the devastating effects gay conversion therapy can cause. For 22 years, he helped run Love in Action, one of the largest Christian gay conversion institutions in the US. But in all his time working for the institution, he says he never once saw a person converted to be straight. And that time he spent over 2 decades, not just deceiving LGBT church members, but also himself. A quick word from our sponsors, Wicked Cat Clothing. Stephanie has always loved Halloween. It is her favourite holiday. She created Wicked Cat Clothing as a labour of love for this holiday, horror movies and cats. She wants to bring her love for these things to others with apparel and accessories, and upon visiting her online store, I can tell you that this is exactly what Stephanie has done. Not only is the clothing high quality, it is respectful of the spooky season, which is sometimes hard to come by in a world that is obsessed with true crime. Listeners of this podcast are being offered an exclusive 30% off Wicked Cat Clothing by visiting www.wickedcatclothing.com and using the code THECULTVAULT30, all one word. That's wickedcatclothing.com and a 30% off for listeners who use THECULTVAULT30. Check the store out today. In 2018, two big Hollywood names, Nicole Kidman and Russell Crowe, went on the big screen in a film called Boy Erased. The American biographical film was based on a 2016 memoir of the same name written by Gerard Conley. The LGBTQ movement gained some positive traction with the release of this film and subsequent award nominations that included winning a Golden Globe Award for Best Motion Drama. The memoir details Conley's life growing up in a devout Baptist church, coming out as gay and agreeing to attend conversion therapy camp upon the request of his parents. Conley talks about his experience during a TED talk named Embracing the Mess, How Compassion Changed My Life. Conley goes on to say it's okay for the audience to laugh at his story at any point, that he was 16 when his father became a Baptist preacher. By the time him and his parents had been attending church 3 times a week for as long as he can remember. By that time, him and his parents had been attending church 3 times a week for as long as he can remember. His mum was the only person who knew he was gay. Conley explains that his missionary Baptist church was a fundamentalist church, that they believe in the literal truth of the Bible. For example, they believe Adam and Eve lived in a garden, that a snake tricked Eve, that she ate the forbidden fruit. And as a result of believing in the literal truth of the Bible, when Leviticus says, thou shalt not lie with mankind as thou lie with womankind, Conley's attraction to other men was seen as sin. When Conley came out as gay to his father, His father replied, and Conley talks about this in jest in his TED talk, "Son, you just don't know what it feels like to be inside a woman." The crowd laughed at this, and Conley follows up, saying, "You're right, and I don't." When his parents handed him the brochure for the Love in Action conversion retreat, he saw happy people on the cover and quotes inside the brochure saying, "Since coming to Love in Action, I've learned I can now be with my family sin-free. I can now have the dream of a straight family." Conley explains how the camp is situated within America's Bible Belt, Arkansas, and that there were around 250 camps across the Bible Belt during this time. He says the process was filling in an application, waiting for a phone call, and then going off to be cured. He was asked upon arrival what had led him to stray from the path of God and into sin. Was it Dungeons and Dragons, video gaming, pornography, masturbation, impure thoughts? The list went on. After he wrote down some things that he thought might apply to this list, a leader went through all of Conley's possessions, ensuring there wasn't anything in there that could, quote, prevent you from becoming completely straight. When he spoke to John Smid during his arrival, alone in his office, Conley says in his memoir that Smid did everything he could to make Conley comfortable, and he seemed goofy, like the class clown. That all changed in the group setting. With chairs laid out in semicircles, the group got together. This group was not made up solely of gay men. It included therapy for participants who were involved in bestiality, paedophilia, and infidelity also. People were made to get up and describe their sex fantasies to the entire group out loud. They were also asked to make family trees and next to people's names put things like H for homosexual, A for adultery, AB for abortion, or dollar sign for gambling. Conley was then told that the sins of the father and the family trickle down, so the more sin, the more gay you would become. Conley was also encouraged to watch sports and engage in manly activities. It was explained to him that a lack of man-to-man contact throughout his life had encouraged him to idolise men and men's bodies. He was also encouraged to speak sinful thoughts aloud to the group, who would then pair Bible verses with it, and everyone was then supposed to feel better. It was during one exercise that Conley said enough. He was placed in front of an empty chair. He was told to envision his father sitting in this chair. He was encouraged to shout at the chair and let go of all the anger and resentment that he felt towards his father, and to say all of the things that he could never say to his father before. But Conley said, "I love my father." He explained to the leader of the group that his father was always there for him. The leaders began yelling to provoke participants, and this is when Conley walked out. He phoned his mum, and she came to pick him up. The leader told his mum, "Your son is very rebellious and he will need to stay for at least a month, maybe 3 months, and then perhaps the year." Conley explained that this sounded about right, as the camp cost almost $1,500 just for 2 weeks. When Conley explained to his mum what had happened, she asked the leader what his qualifications were for leading this class. He said he had a degree in marriage counselling. At that point, she took her son by the hand and led him away from there. His mum then asked if he'd thought about killing himself, and Conley replied yes. This is when she figured it would be better to have a gay son than a dead son. So they worked through things, Conley and his mum, and him and his dad now exchange poetry. And even though it's been 10 years, Conley said he didn't want to think about John Smith or anyone else involved in this experience, and he isn't sure that he's ready to forgive anybody, despite public apologies. Vice did a documentary on conversion therapy which you can find on YouTube. It's titled, "We Went to Gay Conversion Camp," and in this, Joseph Nicolosi Sr. speaks about reparative therapy, men shout loudly at empty chairs, and a young man named Sam Brinton, who is now co-chair for the LGBT movement, #BornPerfect. He is also a survivor of conversion therapy. He tells his story now all over the world in the hope that conversion therapy will gain a worldwide ban. He says in his documentary, "Then the physical abuse began. He tied down my hands and put ice on them while showing me erotic pictures of men. He wrapped my hands in hot coils, stuck needles in my fingers and shocked me with electricity. Through all of this, I remained gay but became suicidal. I learned to lie and through that survive, but others weren't so lucky." A study from the Williams Institute at the University of California in 2018 showed that 698,000 people participated in conversion therapy. It is estimated that 2/3 of that number will have been coerced or forced into the therapy with no other choice. The same study also suggested that 20,000 people from the LGBTQ community will undergo conversion therapy before they are 18. In 2012, a bill was signed to prevent conversion therapy on minors in the state of California. Governor Jerry Brown said, quote, "These practices have no basis in science or medicine, and they will now be relegated to the dustbin of quackery," before proceeding to sign this bill. As of today, conversion therapy is illegal to perform on minors in California, New Jersey, Oregon, Illinois, Vermont, New Mexico, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Nevada, Washington, Hawaii, Delaware, Maryland, New Hampshire, New York, Massachusetts, Colorado, Maine, and Virginia. The bill did fail to pass in Utah, so an executive order was signed by Governor Gary Herbert on January the 22nd, 2020, instead. Germany, Albania, and Malta have followed suit and have also made conversion therapy illegal for minors this year. Unfortunately, conversion therapy is still legal in the UK despite government pledges to eradicate it in 2018. However, it is not practiced under the National Health Service or NHS. In 1973, the American Psychological Association removed homosexuality as a medical diagnosis. They also distanced themselves from techniques used in treatment. But self-proclaimed experts, faith-based groups, ex-gay ministries, continued to perform therapy from talking right through to exorcisms. One such faith-based group is known as JONA, Jews Offering New Alternatives for Healing. Nico Lang released an article for NBC News on this group. It said, "One of the country's most infamous providers of so-called conversion therapy, a contentious practice that tries to change a gay person's sexual orientation, will be forced to pay up to $3.5 million after it was found to be in violation of a 2015 court order to shut down. It's a deterrent and a warning shot," Michael Ferguson, one of the plaintiffs in the case, told NBC. "If you're practicing conversion therapy, make no mistakes that you will be found out and you will be punished. We are not going to tolerate these practices on members of our community any longer, particularly the most vulnerable." After a jury found the group JONA guilty of unconscionable commercial practices in 2015, its offices reopened under a new name. An article on NBC News stated, "The APA Task Force on Appropriate Therapeutic Responses to Sexual Orientation determined that efforts to change sexual orientation are unlikely to be successful and involve some risk or harm. The process of conversion therapy can lead to a loss of sexual feeling, depression, suicidal thoughts or attempts, and anxiety. According to the APA, conversion therapy used to cure homosexuality can also contribute to the idea that anything other than heterosexuality is fundamentally flawed, which can lead to a culture of bullying and discrimination and stigma." A 2019 survey carried out by Outright Action International found that 1/3 of people around the globe who have undergone conversion therapy chose to do so. 2/3 did not choose willingly. Conversion therapy has been closely linked to suicidal ideation, drug abuse, and depression. The American Medical Association has endorsed a nationwide ban on conversion therapy, along with the APA. So headway is being made in changing legislation around the world on conversion therapy. However, clearly more needs to be done. And this is only one aspect of the LGBTQ plus community struggles that we are still seeing today. Homosexuality is the tip of an iceberg of oppression for those who do not identify as heterosexual. Hilary Daniels wrote in the acpjournals.org, "In this position paper, the American College of Physicians examines the health disparities experienced by the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community and makes a series of recommendations to achieve equity for LGBT individuals in the healthcare system. These recommendations include enhancing physicians' understanding of how to provide culturally and clinically competent care for LGBT individuals, addressing environmental and social factors that can affect their mental health and physical well-being, and supporting further research into understanding their unique health needs. The lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender community is diverse, comprising of persons from various races, ethnicities and socioeconomic backgrounds. However, LGBT persons face a common set of challenges within the healthcare system. These challenges range from access to healthcare coverage and culturally competent care to state and federal policies that reinforce social stigma, marginalisation or discrimination. Recent years have brought about reliable data collection, research and a greater understanding of the healthcare needs of the LGBT community and the challenges they face in accessing care. Although great strides have been taken in reducing health disparities in the LGBT community, much more needs to be done to achieve equity for the LGBT persons in the healthcare system. Despite the need for more rights and legislation in place to protect the LGBTQ plus community, let's not forget the milestones achieved with things like same-sex marriage becoming legal in so many countries, gender reassignment surgery available under the NHS, and same-sex couples able to adopt. And in the last 2 years alone, New York governor signs a law banning the so-called gay and trans panic legal defence strategy. The tactic used asked a jury to find that a victim's sexual orientation or gender identity is to blame for a defendant's violent reaction. New York follows California, Rhode Island, Illinois, Nevada and Connecticut as the sixth state to pass this law. In September 2019, Billy Porter becomes the first openly gay black man to win an Emmy for Best Lead Actor in a Drama Series. On February the 10th, 2020, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upholds a ruling that the state of Idaho must provide gender confirmation surgery for Adrie Edmo, an inmate in the custody of the Idaho Department of Corrections. This ruling marks the first time a federal appeals court has ruled that a state must provide gender assignment surgery to an incarcerated person. According to the court opinion, the gender confirmation surgery, or GCS, was medically necessary for Edmo and ordered the state to provide the surgery. On June the 15th, 2020, the Supreme Court rules that federal laws protect LGBTQ workers from discrimination. This landmark ruling extends protections to millions of workers nationwide and is a defeat for the Trump administration, which argued that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act that bars discrimination based on sex did not extend to claims of gender identity and sexual orientation. So this was just America, but in Ecuador, in 2019, civil marriage between same-sex couples becomes legal. In Brazil, LGBT discrimination becomes illegal. The Supreme Federal Court criminalised LGBT discrimination nationwide, and now, according to new law, it is considered a crime of racism. In Botswana, homosexual activity becomes legal. Botswana's High Court has ruled in favour of decriminalising homosexuality in a landmark decision for campaigners. In Taiwan, same-sex marriage becomes legal. In Puerto Rico, conversion therapy becomes banned. And in Angola, homosexual activity becomes legal. Some of these may seem years behind most Western countries in the world, but the point is that the world is moving forward. People are slowly being able to love who they want openly, without the stigma attached and the threat against their lives. There is such a long way to go, but at least we have Pride every year to remind us of this. And of course, we wouldn't have Pride without the Stonewall riots. So I can't get through this episode without giving a small mention to the brave people who fought for the LGBTQ plus rights that people have today. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you would like to get in touch, then please do so by emailing me at cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can get in touch on Instagram and Twitter at @cultvaultpod. I also can't finish this episode without giving a huge thank you to my very good friend Meg for giving me such incredible cover art for this episode. I will put a link to her Etsy store in the description, and I will be posting her store all over my social media because she is an incredible artist and she can create crafts and she can create animations. So definitely please check out her store. In my next episode, I will be wrapping up part two of the tragic story of Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow. Until then, remember to celebrate and love each other. I'm your speaker, Casey. Happy Pride Month, and this is The Cult Vault.